Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. It is the fourth installment of our very prestigious year-end political awards for 2015. We've already handed out Crystal Martinis in nine different categories. So we're now in the second half of our awards presentation. And today we look at the categories of best political idea, worst political idea, and boldest political tactic. And Jim and I were just discussing before we started recording that best political idea for 2015 was a very elusive one. This is the one we really racked our brains for, which means it wasn't, as we've established before, it was not a good year. Okay, I'll go first, and mine is, I really had to stretch for this one because it's politically related, but it's not a politician involved. Brian Williams in February went on the NBC Nightly News and once again told his highly exaggerated story of being hit by an RPG while in a helicopter while covering the Iraq War. The more that people came forward, the more his story started to unravel. NBC briefly suspended him. Then it started digging into some other stories and figured out there were other embellishments along the way. They suspended Brian Williams for 6 months when they could have just given him a slap on the wrist. And ultimately, Jim, they decided that his actions and his inaccuracies and basically puffing up his own role in a lot of different things merited a change at the anchor desk for the NBC Nightly News. Lester Holt got the job on a permanent basis. Williams did stay on the payroll. He now does breaking news on MSNBC, which is probably worse punishment than actually getting fired. And the funny thing was that he's been around on a couple of breaking stories in the past few weeks, but one of the big ones he covered in recent days was the closure of the LA schools due to a terrorist threat, which turned out to be a hoax. So
strangely fitting, wasn't it?
So don't give a lot of kudos to NBC on a lot of different things, but when the face of your network gets into trouble, the instinct is usually to circle the wagons and say it's not a big deal and get him back in the chair and try to have everything blow over. They didn't do that. They had a full-blown investigation. They suspended him for a long time and ultimately removed him from the most premier spot on the network news operation. So that's the best idea and the best move of the year from my perspective.
My nominee for the best political idea, and like you, I found it a really... We were wandering in a sparse, arid desert of political ideas for this year. So I'm going to give something that's actually going to go into effect for next year. We are in another presidential election cycle. The Republican National Committee did not like how things worked out the last couple of times. We are right now this year. They look at when they held the Iowa caucuses for Republicans in the past. 2012, they held it January 3rd. 2008, they held it January 3rd. 2004, January 19th. 2000, January 24th. Not since 1996 have we held it in February. Well, this year it's held February 1st. I think the process of the primaries has gotten stretched out too long. I think doing it like 2 days after New Year's Eve is not necessarily a good idea. I think it's good to push it back a little bit. I think, you know, people argue the compressed schedule is going to hurt certain candidates, or there'll be a bandwagon effect or something like that. The other thing which I felt was indeed a serious problem for the party was you'd end up with your nominee, whether it was McCain or Romney or somebody, and you'd end up in a circumstance where they'd have the nomination pretty much in hand, but they would not be able to get the general election funds they'd raised. They couldn't spend them until they were officially the nominee, and they were becoming officially the nominee later and later in the year. Back in 2000, it was at the end of July, and usually you had it in August for all throughout the 80s and 90s. Beginning of August back in 2000. Then, you know, last couple of cycles, you had it, you know, beginning of September in 2004, beginning of September in 2008, and, you know, really at the end of August last time when we had our fun joy of the hurricane in Tampa. This year, the Republican National Convention is going to be held in mid-July. The Democratic one will be held in Brooklyn about a week later. I think it's good to abbreviate that schedule. The last actual caucuses and primaries are going to be held in, looks like the second week in June. Means basically about 5 weeks is that window where the nominee might be short on funds and won't be able to do that. So we'll have that giant pot of general election spending money starting in mid-July. I think, you know, traditionally the Democrats have beaten up Romney in that period. They beat up Bob Dole in that period back in 1996. I think this is a change that's going to work out for the better. We'll see how it shakes out. But I'm going to give the RNC a bit of rare praise around these parts to say, hey, I think this is going to work out, and I give you credit for at least trying to address the problem.
Very good. On to the worst political idea now, and one that immediately came to mind, and we've referred to it earlier, at least I did in my selection of Tom Cotton as the rising star. When President Obama earlier this year declared that there would not be any designation of the Iranian nuclear deal as a treaty, Republicans had a couple of options. They could have said, absolutely not, we're going to fight you any way we can, including going to court, because the Constitution is very clear that a deal such as this is a treaty and requires two-thirds affirmation from the United States Senate. Instead, the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Bob Corker of Tennessee, came up with a convoluted plan of essentially flipping that on its ear. And that meant that it would take, in theory, a majority of members of Congress to reject the deal, but it also gave the president the option to veto it, which means it really needed to be two-thirds rejection of the deal rather than two-thirds in favor of it. The fact that Obama eagerly agreed to sign it should have been a clue to these people, but they passed it anyway, and surprise, surprise, they not only got the votes to sustain a veto in the Senate, Republicans couldn't even manage to get enough votes to get the bill to the president's desk. The Democrats actually filibustered it. And as we saw at the end of the year, not only that, it's fully funded in the omnibus bill. And so Corker Cardin, worst political idea of 2015.
That's a really good nomination, Greg. I think it's a very strong justification for that. I'm going to go in a different tack. And some listeners may not like this, so maybe you want to turn down the speaker here. And again, it's diffused blame. It's not like there's one person I can say, hey, this is your fault, this is a bad idea. I think some of this belongs to the big donors of the Republican Party. Some of this goes to the small donors who could have affected this. I think certainly whoever was responding to pollsters, and we've had our beefs with pollsters in the past, and some of this goes to the networks who decided to have this. You have to have national polling support before you can, you know, participate in a primetime debate. Yes, I'm saying the worst political idea of the year was not nominating Bobby Jindal, you stupid Republican voters. Alternately, I could also say Rick Perry and Scott Walker. Collectively, we have good, accomplished Republican governors who've gotten big, important things in their states. And what did you do? You put it for a billionaire casino developer and a really nice brain surgeon who doesn't know what he's talking about in national security. Way to go, Republican voters. Way to go. And a lot of people say, well, look, we haven't voted on anything yet. Yes, fair point. And as I pointed out, this is not all. If these guys had lost the primaries, I'd be able to say, look, you know what? It was fair and square. They made their pitch. They didn't. Some people might say, oh, you know, Jim, look, all of these candidates had their time on the national stage. Walker couldn't manage his money and burn through it really fast. Rick Perry, too, had huge advantages. Jindal really never had much of a big national base of support. But you know what? They should have. They should have, because they were among the better candidates. They'd gotten stuff done. I think all three of them are indisputably conservative. The idea that, you know, formerly pro-choice, formerly pro-gun, you know, like we're taking guys who have no political record. You can throw Carly Fiorina in this category here, right? People who've never done anything in the political realm, in the realm of government, and showing them we're so in love with outsiders, we're trying to pick people who don't know how the system works, which is why Donald Trump can run around saying, oh, I'm going to sign an executive order saying that every cop killer has to get the death penalty. We are in love with people who don't know how government works, and it's a you reach the point where I don't even know if I understand this party anymore. I don't recognize it. Jim, you're out of touch. Yeah, I am out of touch, because I actually think the Constitution matters. And a good chunk of the Trump supporters are fully okay with ideas that completely violate the Constitution. And it's a terrible place for a party to go. I think we are careening off the cliff. And it could be the functional death of conservatism, since what Trump is running on and what a good chunk of the party seems to fall in love with right now is populism, which is not the same. And most dangerous about it is its disregard for the rule of law, disregard for precedent and history, and everything that the Republican Party is supposed to stand for. There we go, Greg.
That's a good rant, Jim. I like that rant. All right, on to boldest political tactic of 2015. And unlike the best political idea, I had a ton of different ideas rattling around in my head, and I don't want to preempt yours by giving a couple of the ones that I didn't choose. But I decided that only one of them really had a positive spin on it, and since it's the holiday season, I just want to feel good as I talked about the boldest political tactic of 2015. Because one of the things that we've noticed about President Obama over his now nearly 7 years in office is it's pretty easy to tell when he's speaking what he's really upset about. When he talks about ISIS, there's nowhere near the passion in his voice when he's talking about Republicans who want to block his agenda and so forth. So getting in his way in a political way is definitely a dangerous place to be, and especially so if you're a member of his own party. We saw that when Democrats revolted en masse with the trade legislation earlier this year. He had some very nasty things to say even about Elizabeth Warren, who is hardly a squishy Democrat from their perspective. So one of the people we've consistently talked about speaking truth to power on the Democratic side is Hawaii Democratic Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, and particularly on the issue of being able to identify our enemy right now as radical Islamic extremists. She's a veteran, and she goes on and on about the need to identify the problem, to have a consistent plan of stopping it, and not getting bogged down in political correctness and trying to whistle past the graveyard on this issue, hoping that it'll go away. She's been very consistent. She's pulled very few punches when it comes to what she sees as the administration's weak handling of the issue, and she's taken some hits for it. She wasn't allowed to come to the first Democratic presidential debate, even though she's the co-chair of the party. So we'll see what her future holds. She's pretty darn liberal on a lot of other issues outside of national security, but when it comes to this issue and the reluctance of Democrats to defy Obama on virtually anything, kudos Tulsi Gabbard.
That is a good, good selection there. One of the things I'm going to contradict my bad martini. That you want to talk about boldest political tactic and something indisputably worked. Donald Trump said whatever popped into his mind. Donald Trump says, you know, he very rarely uses notes, very rarely uses any prepared remarks. He just goes, you know, if he does, you know, he's announcing something like the tax plan where he actually needs it. He just goes up. He does interviews all the time. He will call, you know, for some reason, the networks let him, you know, dial in. And he just says the first thing that seems to pop into his mind. And oftentimes, you know, people like me will point out how contradictory it is. Oftentimes it will be kind of, you know, there'll be a confusion. It'll be vague. There's a whole discussion about whether he supported a registration for Muslims. Wasn't even clear he was, you know, and paying attention to the question he was asked. And yet, obviously, it worked for him. And he's, you know, as we, you know, record this, he is the front runner and seems to be, you know, on path to do quite well. I think it does say something about the hunger for authenticity. I think it does say something about how all the candidates I mentioned before that I really like didn't speak in a way that people thought they were getting the rawness, the directness. They all kind of feel like there's this sugarcoating or spin or somebody's being very careful with their words. I think we've reached a point of a fundamental disconnect between the people who are in government and the people who are governed. And I think there's a lot of this belief, you know, should be laid at the feet of the administration, but there's some blame that indisputably goes to the feet of Republicans as well. I think when you see in some of these debates, people really respond to Chris Christie. There's kind of this sense that, okay, finally somebody's just leveling with me. The fat guy is giving me the skinny. Right? He's finally, there's no spin there. And so I salute that. I think it's having very negative effects, and I think, you know, for the country. But I do think that there is a need for politicians to speak from the heart, speak what they really think, be direct, be blunt. I could do without all the, you know, the occasional four-letter words that they're using to punctuate their remarks. But I think people do feel like they're often getting canned pablum, and there's something to be said for that. And it worked out very well for Trump, and maybe the whole country needs a bit more of that boldness.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. He's been himself, and every political analyst in the world probably would have told you that wouldn't work, but it's worked for him so far, and that was certainly one I considered as well. Two others I considered were Putin going into Syria and Obama flipping back on the worst political idea, just deciding to ignore Congress on some of these treaties on climate change and the Iran nuclear deal. I ultimately decided not to go with it, A, because Tulsi Gabbard was a more positive one, and also because when you look at who was going to stop Putin and who was going to stop Obama, you had to realize the opposition wasn't going to show up. So, Happy holidays, everyone.
Yeah. It's a rebuilding year for a lot of our happy points, but that's where we are, and we will continue to give people the news and what's good and what's bad and what's crazy. And maybe next year will be a rebuilding year for good.
Well, let's hope so. We still got two episodes, though, of our year-end awards to come tomorrow and Thursday. And tomorrow we'll be taking a good long look at the media from 2015. So buckle up for that one. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch with our year-end political awards.